Is another war brewing in the Balkans? Politicians in the Bosnian Serb Republic have voted to pull out of the union with Bosnia and Herzegovina. Western countries are warning that secession could destabilize the entire region yet again. So why do the Serbs want to quit now? This is Inside Story. Hi, welcome to the program. I'm Kim Vanell. It's being described as the most serious crisis in the Balkans region since the Bosnian War. That war ended in 1995 after ethnic cleansing atrocities killed tens of thousands and forced millions to escape. The relative peace since then is being endangered by growing nationalistic rhetoric and a vote to split from Bosnia and Herzegovina. On Friday, politicians in the Bosnia Serb Republic, or Republika Srpska, voted to pull out of Bosnia and Herzegovina's three major institutions, the armed forces as well as the legal and tax systems. Condemnation of the secessionist move has come from the United States, the European Union, Britain, France, Germany and Italy, all warning that the stability of the whole Balkan region is threatened.
We are withdrawing our permission for the joint armed forces of Bosnia-Herzegovina. In the next 6 months, we will talk and see if there is a possibility to form a new structure for the armed forces, considering our position. Or we will pick any of two options, to form an army of Republika Srpska or submit a law for the general demilitarization of Bosnia.
Now, we'll begin our discussion about latest developments in a moment, but first, let's take a look at what happened before. Between 1992 and 1995, Bosnian Serbs, Muslims and Croats fought a bloody war, which killed an estimated 200,000 people and divided the country along ethnic lines. Western nations intervened by sending military forces to keep the warring sides apart. After a US initiative, peace was eventually achieved in what's known as the Dayton Accords. They divided Bosnia into two autonomous regions, the Federation of Bosnia and Herzegovina, as well as the Bosnian Serb Republic, or Republika Srpska. Both would function independently, but would govern jointly, sharing the institutions of security, the rule of law and the economic system, which now the Bosnian Serb Republic wants to withdraw from. OK, let's bring in our guests. In Sarajevo, the capital of Bosnia and Herzegovina and its largest city, Rajoef Bajerovic, who is a former Bosnian government minister. He's also vice president of the US-Europe Alliance. That's an American organization which campaigns to boost transatlantic ties. In Serbia's largest city, Belgrade, is Žarko Korać, former deputy prime minister of Serbia. And in the German capital, Berlin, we have Bodo Weber, senior associate at the Democratization Policy Council. It campaigns to boost liberal democratic values. A very warm welcome to you all. Thank you for joining us on Inside Story. I'd like to begin with you, Rajoef Bajerovic. I just want to get your reaction, first off, to this move by legislators in the Republika Srpska to essentially start withdrawing from these important national institutions.
Well, this is a clear attempt at breaking up Bosnia-Herzegovina as we know it. The Bosnian War was stopped in 1995, but it never really ended. The war simply moved from the battlefield to the institutions. And the Bosnian Serb leadership, led by Mr. Milorad Dodik, with the full support, and this is an important point, of Vladimir Putin's Russia, have deemed it the right time to try to finish what they started during the war in the 90s. So we're talking about a continuation of the genocidal policies of the 90s by other means. So the idea here is to achieve Bosnian Serb wartime goals, which included perpetrating a genocide through peaceful means. So they want to basically use the parliament to finish off what they couldn't do on the battlefield.
Okay, Žarko Korać, I'd like to bring you in. Do you agree with that assessment, or what do you see as the aim here as far as Milorad Dodik is concerned?
Well, Milorad Dodik, I agree that Milorad Dodik basically was on a road to separation of of Republika Srpska from Bosnia and Herzegovina. He's very clear about that. He's not so clear about date, terms, but he just, in a parliament of Republika Srpska, they just voted for, I must emphasize that the whole of the opposition in that parliament walked out, but his party, which has a majority, just voted to go along this process of separation, which means he wants again to have a separate army in Republika Srpska. He wants to have a separate security agency and some other institutions, which is de facto the first serious move to separation. He's not yet saying this is separation, but he mentioned that quite a number of times in previous months, that at the end of this process, he wants a referendum on a separation, meaning that Republika Srpska would become a sovereign, separate state from Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Okay, I'd like to bring you in, Boro Weber. If that is the road that Republika Srpska is on, what do you imagine the fallout will be?
Well, not sure. I mean, this is the road. Is it the aim of Mr. Dodik? I'm not so sure. I'm rather worried that this is a joint product by a completely insidious West and its deterrent failure and of a result of 15 years of appeasement policy that did not function at all. It backfired.
Explain what you mean to me by appeasement policy.
Well, we've been appeasing since 2005, when basically the West has unilaterally disarmed and is not using its instruments in Bosnia, its civilian and military instruments, to appease a nationalist agenda, starting with Mr. Dodik's. But we're currently seeing, even in the more deepening crisis of the West, since the beginning of this year, something we have seen in Kosovo, Serbia, in the last 3 years, of Western negotiators, middle-layer officials of EU and US trying to negotiate some settlements, allegedly trying to push through some, breaking some political deadlocks under reform agenda, but basically is by giving in to nationalist agendas in the so-called negotiations over reform of the election law. And I see the current escalation in this context, in which really the West is in deep crisis and is basically throwing overboard its democratic principles and values. And I fear that the current dynamics, I mean, Mr. Dodik for 15 years is playing with fire. He is a Machiavellian opportunist. He's using the tools that this dysfunctional Bosnian state gives him by raising ethnic tensions. For 15 years, he's threatened maybe 30 times with secession or referenda. It seemed for the whole time that he's enjoying his authoritarian rule by not, you know, implementing these threats. And I'm not sure that was his plan in this case. I fear more that we're already in a very deep territory of political miscalculation, in which he is finally forced to implement his threats and has no way to U-turn because of this irresponsible acting of EU and US officials.
Okay, we'll talk about possible off-ramps a little later in the program. Rajoef Barović, is this a done deal then? Is this happening, or does Milorad Dodik want to negotiate? Like, is there an off-ramp?
Well, the off-ramp is there. But Dodik does not want an off-ramp. The West has repeatedly been offering off-ramps to Dodik for the last 15 years. And every single time, he would take the one that would give him the most, basically the very last off-ramp. But what I fear is happening now is that Dodik really is not acting alone. He's acting at the behest of Vladimir Putin. And what's happening in Bosnia, I think, can only be meaningfully understood if you analyze it in conjunction with what's happening across Europe. So Ukraine, Bosnia, and Belarus are, in my view, part of the same crisis that is instigated from Moscow.
Explain that for me a little bit more. You think that the buildup of Russian forces in eastern Ukraine is connected to what's happening here. Can you just explain that a little bit more for me?
Well, Dodik was just with Putin several days ago. He meets him frequently. Russia is openly supporting the secession drive and has been doing that for many years now. Mr. Putin has managed to get for a number of years EU and especially Berlin, Angela Merkel's tacit consent for Dodik's behavior. Because keep in mind that Dodik was never sanctioned by European Union, nor did any of the member states decide to bilaterally sanction him or cause any sort of a headache for him. So this is part and parcel of what's going on across Europe. Russians are there fully for Dodik. And this is something that a lot of people in the EU don't want to see. They want to pretend that the crisis in Bosnia, and I think it's a regional crisis. It's not a, what happens in Bosnia doesn't stay in Bosnia. Bosnia is not like Vegas, It's not something, it's not a piece of European real estate where you can have an isolated crisis that's not going to spill over. Same applies to Ukraine, of course. But Dodik has vocal support of Mr. Putin. There are a number of indicators that the Russian hybrid, so-called little green man type of people have entered Bosnia, even in 2014. You have paramilitary units that the Bosnian Serbs have built up with the Russian help. You had the usual suspects like the biker gangs, the people who showed up first in Crimea in 2014, visited Bosnia several times. And it sort of looks like the same strategy, except for that the Russians are unable to deploy because Bosnia is so far away. They have to fly over either Ukraine or to NATO member states, Bulgaria or Romania. And it's not easy for them to get permits to do
that. So there's logistical problems. I hear what you're saying. I want to move this on to you, Jarko Korać. What has Serbia said about these latest developments in particular? How does it view Dodik?
Well, we have a president who was, as a young man in the 90s, belonged to the most radical nationalistic party in Serbia, mostly allied with Slobodan Milošević and his party. He's a bit more silent lately, seeing obviously that Dodik is that this endeavor might have a very dangerous end. But there is no doubt that Belgrade actually supports what is Dodik doing. If you look at tabloids in Serbia, which are really, really controlled by the government, they are supporting Dodik. There is absolutely no criticism of what Dodik is doing. And ironically, it goes under the very liberal title that people are entitled to have a referendum on their fate. It looks a little bit to what you have in Crimea. I'm not comparing really directly because Crimea is a really separate case. But it looks like this, I'm going to have a referendum and most of the people will vote for independence and we'll see what comes next. The problem is that I'm not so sure that the EU has some joint position on this. I want to remind you that a few weeks ago, the Prime Minister of Hungary, Mr. Orban, was in Banja Luka. That's the capital of Republika Srpska. That is a political support for Mr. Dodik in a very critical moment. And obviously, Mr. Dodik is seizing the moment. He's seeing that Biden administration has internal problems, that they are now engaged in Southeast Asia, in Asia generally, that there is a crisis on a border between Ukraine and Russia. And he is very cynically using this moment. He's not losing sight of what's happening elsewhere in the world. At the moment, European Union does not have some strong leader. I'm not sure Macron is that kind of a leader. Angela Merkel is now officially retired, not active anymore politically. So he's actually using the moment to fulfill his promise that Republika Srpska, at the moment, what he's saying is that they want back certain rights they had before the army was unified. He wants separate armies, separate judicial institutions, separate state security, and so on. Okay. So what you hear, I agree with Mr. Weber. You see impotence in foreign policy, especially in regard to Southeast Europe. You see impotence, political impotence of European Union, and you see U.S. not really having very high on their list of priorities international, the Balkans and Bosnia. So Dodik is actually very correctly judging that he perhaps might even go through with all these things he's doing without real sanctions or real, they are warnings to him. They are even threats.
So it seems like you're saying
avoid these sanctions, or even if
it seems like you're saying that he's seeing a moment in, and he's seizing it, Mr. Vorweber. Would secession necessarily mean war? Some have described the status quo as akin to keeping Bosnia and Herzegovina on life support, as opposed to really curing the problem.
We have to understand on the one side that, as I said, I mean, these threats are here for 15 years. Dozens of times we had these threats, decisions by the RS National Assembly, threats of secession, a referendum. But it has never been that serious as now. These are the most concrete and furthest going step. And the notion that has creeped under the skin of people in Bosnia is that of war. That is that of the 1990s war. Of course, we are not here where we have been in the 90s. We don't have ethnic armies. It is very hard to see practically how Mr. Dodik could form an army, how he could, I mean, the question is, could he break up the Bosnian army while the leadership, which is still ethnic for sure, could go that way. Ordinary soldiers are really not inclined, like citizens in Bosnia are not inclined, including in the RS, to go any of these dangerous paths. And Mr. Korac has already mentioned half of the parliament has left the parliament out of protest against this dangerous path, the opposition. So it would for sure not be a war in the classical sense. But I mean, this is, let us understand, this is not returning of any competences. This is an anti-constitutional path, and it would be an anti-constitutional. It has been an anti-constitutional decision in the RS Parliament this Friday, and implementing these announced laws that would implement this policy until May this year would be anti-constitutional. So, I mean, this will lead to the breakup of Bosnia, and this cannot be peaceful, even if it's not war in the classical sense or even in the 90s sense. And of course, as Mr. Bajrić has mentioned, this cannot stay local. Whatever the intimate position of Mr. Vučić, President Vučić in Serbia is, by not openly speaking up and basically, you know, by pretending they do not share the position, but by basically lending de facto support, this is really endangering the regional security. Whatever the Russian position in here is, I just have to remind me that it was my organization that in 2014 published the information that back then Mr. Dodik already wanted to go after the Ukraine crisis started, annexation of Crimea, for secession, that he was pushed by Putin. But at that time, Mr. Vučić, who was closer to EU integration, the West, was not going along. If we talk about the scenario where Russia will or will not attack Ukraine, it would be in the interest of Mr. Putin to open a second front. And that's something that's currently completely omitted from Western debate and from Western capitals. Thank you.
Rev Barovic, one analyst penned this suggestion, and I'm interested in your take on it, that the Dayton Accords was a good way to end the war, but a bad way to build a state, that it has basically inherent problems. What's your take?
Well, Dayton system does have inherent problems. I don't think there's anyone who works on Bosnia who will tell you that that's not the case. The problem here is that Dayton is not being upheld. So the crisis is really not about Dayton, in my view. The crisis is about Milorad Dodik deciding that he does not like Dayton anymore. Now, the language he uses is one of it's a legalese way of describing that what he's doing is really not that crazy. But, I mean, there's virtual consensus in the analyst community that what Dodik is doing will lead to conflict. And I hope that Bodo is right. But I think that we would have a serious, serious type of a conflict. I don't think you'd be, several isolated incidents type of a conflict. It would be a real, real conflict. Mm-hmm. Because there are too many, first of all, RS is a non-contiguous entity. So for Dodik to really make the RS an independent state, he would need to seize Brčko, which is a city in the north of Bosnia, which separates the Irish in two. There's the issue of area around Sarajevo. So basically, Sarajevo would be, once again, would have a foreign, quote-unquote, army right above it. We're talking about 300-400 meters as the bird flies. So those things cannot stand. And Dodik is aware of this. It is very difficult to understand why he's pushing the IRS, which in this conflict would be the weaker side. I mean, I think people agree about that as well. Why he's pushing the IRS to the brink of war. And the opposition in the IRS is saying that he's basically gambling with what they gained during the war. I think they're correct, because the Dayton Accord basically froze the whatever you had on the front lines in terms of war, and basically wrote a constitution based on that. Now, the facts on the ground 25, 26 years later are very different. So it is really hard to understand Dodik's motivation. And the only reasonable explanation that one can make is that he's being pushed into this by Putin. Because Putin, in my view, has been asking from Dodik that he actually, create as deep of a crisis in the Balkans as possible. And as Boris said, this is the second front for Putin, or maybe a third front. Maybe okay. We'll see something in Belarus as well.
Jacques Rokoric, I'd like to come back to you. Do we know what the people in the Republic of Srpska want, whether they support these moves or not?
Actually, that's a very good question. And a few times in the past weeks, I asked myself the same question, because Dodik somehow speaks for all of the people of Republika Srpska. I don't want to go in this program into technicalities, but Republika Srpska is now almost ethnically 100% Serbian. It wasn't so before the war. So we will go into the results of war, ethnical cleansing, and horrible crimes. But at the moment, it's almost ethnically completely Serbian. And I haven't seen any opinion poll. The fact that opposition walked out, I think it's significant. It's not just bickering who is in power, who will gain, and so on. It's a rather serious move. By the way, Dodik said when they walked out that they are traitors. It's an interesting insult.
I just want to pause you there.
They're aware.
I want to pause you there because I can see Rejof Barovic trying to get attention. Go ahead.
I just want to set the record straight with the esteemed colleague Korac, whom I respect very much. Republika Srpska is not really ethnically homogeneous. About 20% of the population is non-Serb. So you have large returning communities of Bosniaks in Republika Srpska, especially in the area around Prijedor in eastern Bosnia. There are municipalities such as Srebrenica that in reality are majority Bosniak. So Dodik would have to engage in ethnic cleansing again, because those populations are not going to accept being part of a state that's not Bosnia. I mean, this is another element of why what he's doing is completely deranged. And I think the local Serb population, if you were to ask them honestly, would you be willing to wage a war for independence of IRS, knowing what you know now, basically that they're the weaker side? Because in 1992, when the war started, the Serbs had over 95% of the weaponry. Now, this time around, it's the Bosniak side that's more armed. So, I would be very, very surprised if the people in the IRS actually wanted to fight a war that they would lose. Which brings me back to the point of Putin. I think this is a suicide move by Dodik in many ways. I mean, he's going to hurt everybody. He's going to hurt Europe, because this crisis will not stay regional.
Okay. Unfortunately, we have run out of time. I really appreciate you joining us here all on Inside Story. A big thank you to our guests, Rejof Barovic, Žarko Korać, and Boro Weber. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Kim Vanel, and the whole team here in Doha. Bye-bye for now.